David A. Price presents...
Hello, folks. Welcome to Marvel Noise, episode 347. I'm your symbiote host, Steve Raker, marvelously marching down here in the comic book bunker, where we've got another front-facing episode, furiously filled with fantastic comics, fun facts, and friendly faces. Andrew the LA Rabbit and WWX Kevin will be on in a minute with me to share some recent reads. Then we'll pull the trigger on our exploration into the Human Rocket's past as we tackle the first 7 issues of the original Nova series from the late 70s. Did you know you can find new episode announcements, image gallery posts, and give us feedback on our Facebook and Twitter pages? And you can stream and download new and archived episodes over on MarvelNoise.com, thanks to Derek Howard and his good works as Supreme Intelligence of the Deliberate Noise Network. And don't give up hope. The 2020 Baltimore Comic Con is strategically scheduled for October 23rd, 24th, and 25th at the Baltimore Convention Center, right there amongst the attractions and eateries of Baltimore's Inner Harbor. The guest list is huge. This is a comics and comic art show, folks. Tickets and details available at BaltimoreComicCon.com. With that said, let me unlock my chamber door and see who's there. All right, I've got Andrew and Kevin here as promised, as threatened, as predicted, as the prophecies foresaw.
Yeah, we're always available. We're always on the speed dial. Do they still have speed dial?
I think so.
Don't we just pull up contacts anymore? I don't think there's like a speed dial anymore.
What if you want to hide someone under the poison control number?
You have to be an old pro. What have you guys been reading? Kevin, entertain me.
What do you want to hear? Which corner of the... Do you want to hear from the Avengers corner? Or do you want to hear from the X-Men corner?
How about the Avengers corner?
All right. I read your Race of the Ghost Riders.
And?
I just don't get some Ghost Rider stories. This is the one... This is really my ongoing thing with certain characters. I think I have those, so like Moon Knight or certain characters where certain stories are done. I'm sure it's an essential part. The basic idea sounds fine, and I can only go so far. Like, the Death Race and everything sounds cool and everything. But
that sounds a little grim. Yeah, Death Race, that sounds like a great idea. Can we get one of those live happening sometime?
But
it's cool.
But racing through hell for many issues, it wasn't as cool as I wanted it to be, I guess. I don't know. It's just something about the other thing is Mephisto. Like, he shows up in so many places. Just not a big fan of Mephisto.
I love Mephisto, although you're right, he's used too many times and ways, but I mean, especially at the time when there is another Ghost... I mean, there was a Ghost Rider title happening and everything, so it's like, it just seemed odd to have... It's like what they're doing with Namor now, where there's just too many different titles where Namor's doing stuff, and it's like, to follow his story, you'd have to rely on some type of kooky reading order from Marvel Unlimited.
Yeah, it just seems... I guess it's just his status quo, and he doesn't have a book, so he's just going around breaking stuff in whatever book.
Is it weird I don't consider Mephisto a Ghost Rider villain?
Hmm. Yeah, that is kind of weird.
I consider him like a Silver Surfer guy.
Well, that's where he appears.
And I'm like, Blackheart is more like the Ghost Rider equivalent.
Oh, then you got Daredevil. Because Daredevil's fighting all those, like, crazy vacuums and Blackheart and all those kind of guys.
I consider that not like a regular villain. That was like a guest appearance special star. Besides, Daredevil steals all his villains from other people.
Wow.
He needs to give Spider-Man a break.
No one's stealing a bullet.
Well, he's had the Owl and the Gladiator, so, you know, there are some, but I don't know. I just, Mephisto and, because I like Zara, what was the original Spirit of Vengeance? I can't pronounce that. The actual demon that he dealt with.
Zarathos.
Zarathos. Yeah,
that's how you say that?
I call him Zarathos, but I'm not good with pronouncing stuff, so. Yeah, like, I thought that was the link, and he worked in that framework. And I get that, like, Mephisto's part of the hierarchy or whatever, but I don't know. I always liked keeping that kind of corner as its own jam.
And I realize, like, maybe because he's just supposed to be, like, the devil and the religious, like, aspect of it or possible aspect of it, I just don't groove on that, which is funny because once you get into Hela and all that stuff, like, I'm totally fine with those characters. Like, everyone else seems way cooler than Mephisto.
Wasn't he cool when Starlin was using him amongst all the other cosmic entities, though? Like, as a little Loki schemer type amongst Thanos and the Infinity Gauntlet and that kind of stuff?
I think that might be one of his best uses.
One more day, Steve.
For whatever reason, I just don't, but anyhow, I got through that. I still like Robbie. He's cool as a Ghost Rider. His crazy car and everything. Like, I could read that. Like, if that would probably be in Japan, that would be like a hit manga, and his car would be doing crazy stuff all the time, and it would be like a 100-volume series, and I would read all of that, all the crazy car adventures. It kind of reminds me of it's a vehicle like Godzilla, where you'd have your underwater adventures, and then at one point the car would go to outer space, and you'd just be having all these wacky side adventures, and I'd be, that's awesome. That's what I want to read. I don't want to really read about him fighting Mephisto or having some race.
But shouldn't that be another Ghost Rider that has like a spaceship, and then there's another one that has a submarine? Like, those are, if you have different vehicles, like, those are all different Ghost Riders. Like, I'm the unicycle Ghost Rider or whatever, you know?
That's the most exciting, just like the Jason Aaron, when he was writing Ghost Rider, when he had the guy that was, like, the biplane.
The biplane was way cool.
It's not that I dislike the horror aspects. Like, it's not that I want it to be, like, hilarious. Like, I love some of the horror stuff, but I also the biplane and all this crazy stuff, like, I always think that's where you go, you have some fun too. Like, it's a weird, you gotta get the proper mix on the Venn diagram where you have your fun and you have your horror, and you gotta get the right combination, for me anyways. I don't know if, as we've learned before, you don't pitch comics to me though, so don't anyone take that for me. But that's what the other cool thing about this book is, whenever he takes over like a celestial or whatever he's riding now, I'm like, that is great. But anyhow, the next arc, this is the one I was really looking forward to, because it dealt with the whole Starbrand thing. Like, you had the whole one issue interlude. Man, I love those one issue interludes.
Tales of Obi-Wan.
So you go back to like, was it 1 billion BC? See the Avengers in quotes? Like, it sort of reminds me of that whole 1959 X-Men or whatever.
Yeah,
they say, oh, this. And I'm just like, weird branding, but whatever. Like, those stories are just grand and exciting and everything like that. But that's, the Starbrand story is kind of weird because it's happening in outer space. And I don't know if we're supposed to take any of the new universe continuity as an example of anything.
No, like, I think what they brought them back with the Secret Wars.
Yeah,
I think that's all water under the bridge.
So I always compare it against like the Hickman stuff when he brought all that stuff back to Earth, and then it was like some Earth defense mechanism and all that ensuing, I guess, chaos. This also goes back to that Marvel issue. What was it called? Is it Marvel Legacy, the one-shot? Where the Ghost Rider was fighting Starbrand, and the Starbrand is, like, gone from Earth. So it shows up in outer space, and there's, like, a whole meeting of cosmic minds of, we got to, like, resolve this thing, or there's going to be a lot of issues. And they sort of resolve. But it's fun because it's Ed McGuinness, and he gets to draw the Gladiator and all these cosmic dudes, and they go to... And then Thor turns into a brood. But he still has that paranoia. Remember when he wasn't worthy of the hammer? So he's trying to be worthy the whole time, but he's turning into a brood, so his hammer is getting heavier. I kind of wonder if it ties in, like, directly, but it kind of makes me wonder puts me in the mind of the Thor ongoing series too, where his hammer's been, in the last decade, his hammer's been acting really weird.
It's been through a lot.
Like, all the stuff they've done with that hammer. So a lot of hammer time is going on. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I never got why Starbrand was the breakout character as far as all the... I never thought Starbrand was particularly more interesting. I mean, as I'm sure I've mentioned, I went big into the new universe and bought everything, and I never didn't think it was like some genius idea that would be plucked out from the other ones, in my personal take. I was fine with DP set. Like, I thought they were all fine ideas. It wasn't like, oh my god, that Starbrand, that was gold. The rest was garbage. I was like, they're all fine ideas. I don't know why that one was the one that people were like, no, that's the real mileage one.
Comic book confession, I've never read a New Universe title at all.
Whoa.
Not a single comic.
Well, we got to do some Starbrand.
Boy, Steve, you missed out. That's how I'm going to retire early. I bought big in the new universe. they're sitting in those old comic bags that used to melt to the comic with one-sided backing board. So they're in gem mint shape, I'm sure. You know?
I think people were starting to snatch some of that up a little bit. The new universe now. Because it's like, what are you going to go for next? Like, if you're collecting, right?
Hey, good luck to them. Like, I hope they get... I'll goof it around. I thought they were fine books. Like, I liked them. I kept buying the thing for the whole thing. It wasn't as... I guess I felt it was never as groundbreaking or anything. It just felt like a good... I mean, it was nice that Marvel had this side thing. And I was always appreciative of, okay, we're going to have the side thing, and it's limited, and you can get in on the ground floor. I mean, obviously, they did that with Ultimate Universe. There's nothing magical about Marvel being like, okay, we got new people. No one wants to run around and buy up all these Avengers number ones and Fantastic Four number one and Amazing Fantasy 15. Let's let them get in on the ground floor on a reasonable amount of titles. Because that's the other thing that Marvel, you know, they started with just the, under that limited distribution where they just had the handful of titles. So it felt like a more reasonable, I'm sure, to the kids of the 60s to buy in and kind of follow along.
I love that opening ad. At least I think it's the opening ad with the, like, the cosmic, like, I mean, it's not like a thunderbolt. But, you know, like, coming to Earth, and they're like, new universe.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I didn't mean to sidetrack. Maybe we'll do a deep dive in the new universe, but I just was always perplexed that Starbrand was... I mean, well, Steve, you've read his modern appearances. It's not like some hot concept we've never seen before.
No, but I like it.
Of a guy getting, you know, like a finding his, you know, it's one of those. Yeah, it's a fun, like I said, none of, but there's nothing in it that's different that we haven't seen before, I felt.
Fair enough.
I haven't read a lot of those, so I don't know if they ever go into, like, maybe the coolness I'm prescribing to it is, like, they never explore any of the Earth defense mechanism stuff, really. Like, maybe everything is after. It's sort of like reading the first Nova series, and then you're like, oh, maybe none of the cool stuff is in here. It's just potential that later writers that I read, like, did all these things with. I don't know.
Well, it could have also been, like, the Byrne JR connection to the character. But I was trying to evaluate it, like, not for the people that started it, but, like, what the character is. Because obviously that's what we're getting now. And I don't know. Like I said, fine concept. Didn't feel it was such better than the other concepts, which I liked. And like I said, I bought all of them. I was a fan. I was in there. It was a new universe for me.
If you want your superheroes more realistic and without costumes, right?
Yeah.
Valiant.
I was just going to say, Shooter just went and took it to Valiant, so.
I mean, Valiant was probably a better launch of it than the new universe.
But I have been reading new comics, boys.
New?
Well, new Treasury edition.
What you got?
I have Fantastic Four Grand Design number 1.
Nice.
Yeah, I think we talked about when the first issue came out.
Yeah, didn't you have a problem with the Rubik's Cube and stuff like that?
I still do not like that. I do not like specific. I feel like, yes, it's a little bit of my weirdness, but you have to not try and, we all know not to lock these characters into too close a time frame.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't work. Like, you know, there's no way these guys launched their spaceship in the mid-60s. Like, Reed Richards is 100 years old. So I feel like sometimes that gratuitous use of something that's clearly from an era is bad. Because I thought they did a good, he does a good job elsewhere of being kind of vague about, you know, Ben's military service and things like that.
That's ideal. Like, if I was going to write, like, I wouldn't want to say rules, because as soon as you have rules, then everyone's like, ugh, like, you're straining under structure to some degree. But yeah, like, if you don't have to mention, like, computers or cell phones, or just be vague about a war, like, it really, like, helps you out in some of these areas.
Yeah, and I feel Sholey, and obviously, I don't know how much work the editors did on this, but really does a good job most of the time of that. And it's so, like, as convoluted as anything for the Marvel Universe is, after reading the X-Men one, the Fantastic Four one is strangely pretty straightforward. Which I really appreciated in a way. Like, it's not, like, yeah, there's a lot of, look, it starts way back when, and with all the time travel and tying in, you know, the Deviants and the Inhumans and the various retcons and things, like, it's still an overwhelming task, but it is way better than the X-Men madness, because it really is the four. I mean, you know, we're going to get the Black Panther, we get a lot of these fun characters, so I'm assuming it's going to go kind of like the X-Men one, and we're going to get a whole ton of different versions, you know, as they continue. Because what's interesting is, I don't know if either of you got the Treasury edition, but they include a reprint.
Yep.
Of Fantastic Four 51, colored by Ed Piskor. Now, what they do with these is the pages are off white, so they can have white as, like, a positive value color, which I really love. I could have done with a little less of, like, the intentional obscuring age look, Because it's fine now, but I'm concerned in 20 years, like, is that going to keep deteriorating?
I've heard that, too. I've heard of other people. They said, yeah, it was fine until I saw the... Like, it was unclear. Like, it looks like there's a level of sheen on it. So if it would have just been... I don't know what you call that. Like, not pure, but... I don't know, less muddy?
Yes, like some kind of... I think to give the aging feel to it, but I don't need that. Like, I don't like the pre-faded screen print t-shirts either. Like, I'm like, believe me, after a couple washes, that's going to look like that. Without intentionally, and then a wonderful collection of various covers, and some of the covers don't use that, like his covers do, but like the Jim Rug, they don't put that effect on, so it's quite shockingly pops off the page. But yeah, it was interesting because I hadn't read 51 Fantastic Four 51 This Man This Monster in a long time, and it's a great story. But it did ring home, like, the things I don't like about the Fantastic Four. Mm-hmm. I don't like that the thing's kind of whiny. Like, all this time, he's always like, oh, I want to be human. And then he gets to be human. He's like, no, I want to be the thing again. And it's like, that's because you like being the thing. So just own up to it. You don't like
he does being after the physical. That.
But you like the power. And you like having that power over people. So you can enforce your will over them. And just, I don't like the fake, like, oh, I don't really like this. I get you don't like that it comes with that, but you can't say no. Once you're a superhero, you can't go back. It's like being a pro athlete.
They just met the Silver Surfer and fought Galactus for the first time the month before, for Pete's sake.
Well, like I said, it's well told, but my problem is more the, and part of what I like about it is the character, like, I never liked Johnny. He was always a spoiled brat. I do like Sue, but she doesn't get a lot of screen time. And I always thought Reed was kind of took advantage of the fact that Sue, like a good woman, was really after him.
Not listening
and
to this.
I'm like, he never had anything to do with her. And I'm like, dude, you need to dump that loser. Like, move on. I was glad when she became Malice. Because I'm like, you know what? Now she's getting some for herself. But it's I love reading this stuff, but just the characters are a total, like I said, except for Sue, just don't care about them. They're terrible, and that's what is the appeal of Marvel. You got like instead of having aspirational characters, you fill it full of jerks.
I'm editing this all out.
And I did like the subplot at that one that I enjoyed was good old Wyatt Wingfoot and Johnny's going to college. So that was kind of fun with the college subplots going. I just always contrast it with the Torch is the natural foil for Spider-Man. I'm being a Spider-Man fan. Obviously, my loyalties were on that side of the rivalry. But yeah, always liked Sue. And I liked as she got in more into her own. But yeah, the other three of them, make it the Invisible Woman comic, and I'm on board. But yeah, I can't recommend reading this book and that original Kirby Lee stuff, because personalities aside, it's just such, it's so well done. Like, you'll just hum along to it and then be like, ugh, these whiny guys. They don't know how good they got it.
I've got a Fantastic Four related book that is more of a horror title, and it is a one-shot from last year that is the predecessor of an upcoming four-issue limited series from the same creative team that actually was supposed to start hitting the stands now, but we're on this pause, so we'll see. Hopefully we get it soon. But it is written by my pal Philip Kennedy Johnson with art by Leonard Kirk, and it's Marvel Zombies Resurrection. Marvel Zombies are back. Here's another title they want to make sure they keep that copyright on.
Well, now that Walking Dead is wrapped up, there's a hole in the market.
Oh, yeah. But yeah, there was only ever one zombie book at a time.
A shambling zombie-sized hole.
In this horror story, which takes place in Hour 616, a group of heroes led by the Fantastic Four go on an alien-like, and I mean like the first movie Alien, like nothing in space can hear you scream, they are journeying to explore an approaching stellar vessel, only to find, you know, terror within, that it's inhabited, in this case, by zombies, which then they gotta fight, right? Oh, and this interstellar vessel, it is a carved out dead husk of Galactus. So it's pretty impressive. The stakes are high, tension and suspense nice and thick. The art is more than adequate. I mean, it's Leonard Kirk, and he clearly tells the story, and the story is intriguing. It's scary. I have no idea where it's going or how they're going to undo what they already did in this issue, and the characterization is spot on. What more can he ask for? I mean, this is our Marvel heroes facing this seemingly unstoppable threat. It takes a lot for me to be excited about Marvel Zombies, but this was very intriguing.
You need to re-examine Marvel Apes.
Also, I feel like it's been enough time that they can revisit this issue. I think, what was the last one? Marvel Zombies 5? Or that was a few years ago. So, yeah. I feel like, you know, there's nothing wrong. Like, I think some of it was just, at least personally, they were beating it to death, and so you give it some room and then bring it back. Like, I don't have any. Makes sense. Like, that's the point of, hopefully in the future, it doesn't, you know, have 100 different series of it, but, you know, just give a taste. Some things work great. It's like, hey, it's the occasional thing, and we get a sample of it, then it goes away, and then it comes back later.
It's a popular what if.
But
this is not an imaginary tale. What? Not a hoax.
What?
This is in our 616.
Oh, no.
And it can never be undone.
No. Nope.
Promised. The publisher is guaranteed that this will never
happen. It all changes here.
What's the next one? Like, Marvel Right Now? Like, are they going to bring that back?
I like the comedy issue where they had the...
How about Marvel 2 months ago, Andrew? All right, you got any more books there, Kev?
I got a lot of books. It depends if you want to hear about them.
Do you want to fire off any more before I segue into our Nova bit, or are you good?
Yeah, I guess I can do... I'll just do a lightning round.
All right.
Okay.
Phil style.
Tribute to Phil. Captain Marvel by Thompson and Garbett. I think I enjoyed the book well enough, but you know the latest one with the... where she was going all, you know, with the crazy face, with like the dark face, like the no face. It's sort of like the Cyclops with the X on the face. You know, you don't really see the face.
And she's fighting the Inhumans villain guy, that Vox.
Yeah, like
it was interesting.
Yeah. I just feel like it was the worst arc of the book.
Really?
Like the art is fine. Like that's not really a thing. It's just, I don't know. I'm sure there was like the idea is good. It seems like it's going to be like a second tier Kree story, like the Live Kree or Die in Avengers, like one of those just good Kree stories. But I'm like, just wasn't enough there for me. Especially the first issue, she's just beating people up, not talking because you can't talk, and then it's like I killed off the Avengers. And I'm just look after 5 minutes. I'm like, that was it. I did not know I still had a title on my pull list that read in 5 minutes. I was surprised. I was extremely shocked.
Funny.
So, hopefully the next one's better.
I like that you don't give up, Kevin.
No, I don't give up. I was just surprised. I don't know. I didn't really have a problem with the symbiote costume or anything, or the concept or anything. But I don't know. I was just surprised when people were like, now the title's picking up. And I was like, really? I don't know. It was very strange. just not my bag, I guess. And then you have the X-Men titles with New Mutants, which is the weird, fractured two creative teams. Like, it doesn't even follow, like one does one does the other. Like, it's just, like, totally at random. So you have, like, Hickman doing an issue with Rod Reiss, and then you have Ed Brisson doing an issue with either Flavino or... I think it's a couple different guys, like not regular guys. And the Hickman story is basically where it's at for me, because they Sunspot and the New Mutants, they go to out into outer space, they're goofing around, they run across the Gladiator and like all these crazy space dudes, the Imperial Guard. Just like a Death Bird, Sunspot's trying to make out with Death Bird. And then they need it. They get caught in a prison. They need a space lawyer. I just keep on thinking of that whole Futurama bit of the single female lawyer. Like, they get pretty much like the worst lawyer. It is just, it is weird. Like, it is serious and it is fun, but it's just Hickman with so many words. Like, he does a recap where Sunspot is recapping, but it's like you're missing issues, but it's not like the Fantastic Four. You know when you ended that one issue and you're like, you missed all the cool stuff?
Yeah.
This is like the reverse of that. Like, you're starting out with that, but instead you're getting a hilarious recap of them traveling from like one planet to another planet. And I guess if you're not tuned in to his personality, maybe you would just find it irritating. I think that's entirely possible. But the other thing they're doing with the X-Men books is they have those, you know, Hickman usually has those graphs or whatever, and all the different writers have been reinterpreting that as like maybe like memos or emails or poems or whatever fits the issue. At one point, they have a battle, big space battle, but he comes up with like an RPG game that you can take out some dice and play the battle.
Yeah.
Just like, I can't believe like the different ways they keep interpreting like this type of thing. Like, here's a double page spread. You're going to see that outcome of this like in the next few pages, but if you want to like play out the battle yourself, have some characters be like get knocked out and everything, you can play the battle and then it'll still wind up as the same result. But I'm like, so much effort. Definitely would remind me of like something one of those image books would do, like Die. Like, they would like totally have something. I think they did have something like that, but not exactly like this. It's like, and the Brisson story, it's like the old, like,
Andrew, it's like the old Freak Brothers game.
Yeah.
You had to stick some Freak Brothers in here. The Brisson side is like some of the other characters go visit Beak, and they run across like a drug cartel that wants access to some of the Krakoa drugs. Not as in, like, that's decent enough, but not as into that side of the story as I'm into the Spacey Crazy Adventure with the crazy space lawyer. Okay, lightning round. Got a lightning round this. Marauders, which is basically by Dugan and Matteo Lawley, which has Drunk Kitty Pride going on a pirate adventure. I think it might be one of the better things I've written from Dugan, because he's really spinning off of all the stuff that Hickman set up in Hawksbox. So you have basically all the, I guess you would say, Game of Thrones in a way, like the whole chess game between like all the Hellfire Club members and then the whole, I guess, island versus island fight, sort of, with, like, Madripoor versus Krakoa. And then Excalibur's other book I caught up on with Tini Howard, Marcus Toe, and I think Wilton Santos comes in for an issue or two. I never know how I'm going to feel about Excalibur. I think this is working out relatively well. It's keeping my interest anyways. Interesting team. And Apocalypse is always like, hey, I want to be known as this now. This symbol here, that's like all his type of games I guess I would say kind of my X-Men. Because that's the thing, I always hear people talk about, like, what's your X-Men group? Like, if you came up in the 90s, your X-Men probably has, like, Rogue, Gambit, Jubilee.
Savage Land Rogue.
Of course. Or then your X-Men is, like, the all new, all different X-Men. And I think, even though, like, I obviously 90s X-Men, big part of my team, I would say it was my team, but also the all new, all different. Because I think I was getting the issues, or I knew about that team, definitely knew about, and thought they were all cool, but also getting the 90s stuff at the same time. So they kind of just mashed together. Sort of like this team, where Psylocke is Captain Britain. They're getting all magic-y with all this stuff. Disposing leaders, putting in puppet leaders. It's pretty exciting.
Do the books stay kind of in their own little X corner of the universe, or are they bumping uglies with the regular, you know, with the other editorial properties?
I would say they all have their own identity, but you can definitely tell that they're all interlinked within the same universe. Like, I don't think it's a big deal if you just wanted to read one of them, but if you were going to read all of them, there is definitely an order to reading them. Because something happens in, like, one of the issues that you'd be like, when did that happen?
No, I mean the X-Books in this Hickman era in general, are they staying in, you know, are they almost like a little side imprint of Marvel right now, where they're doing the whole X-Men thing between the titles, or are they interacting with and dealing with the regular characters that we see in the Marvel universe in the books?
It's too big for them to just be off on their own. Like, what they've done is too big to, like, contain it to a sideline. Like, they have the FF X-Men miniseries. Mm-hmm. Since Franklin's the only Omega level mutant that's aligned with the humans, and then you have other like people or what have you from like what sort of like how our world has been turned upside down, and like whenever you think you've thought of like everything that could be affected, like there's always another story. Like this feels like almost like the exact same thing. Like you think, oh, well, what does this mean to the world? How does this industry change? How does this affect this character or this book? Like there's always, there'll be a lot of stuff, and it's firmly within the Marvel universe.
Nice. All right. Why don't we go way, way back and read a book from the 70s, like we were talking about doing last time, and you guys humored me and we actually read it, and get back to some old Marv Wolfman Nova. Okay, let's jump back into the second half of the 1970s and hit the first seven issues of the 25-issue title Nova.
I'm Marvel's newest bombshell.
In the tradition of Spider-Man. These issues are collected in trade paperback collections. Like, there's a complete Nova series and that kind of thing. And they are on the Marvel Unlimited digital service as well.
That's how I'm looking at them on the digital service. It's a fun way. I like, in fact, they include one extra page of text in one on the digital edition. I like when they add the little extras in.
Yes, indeed. The letters page or other little pinups or character lists, floating heads, if you will. Well, issue number one is from September of 1976 with a Rich Buckler, Joe Sinnott cover.
That's a good cover.
Is written by Marv Wolfman with art by John Buscema and Joe Sinnott. I mean, that's a pretty good art team. And like you said, a pretty good cover.
What I thought was interesting about the cover is that it's the old school kind of Superman flying. Or what I always liked about Nova is he was the first one with like the rocket bottom half.
Totally.
For younger people, maybe Cannonball would be a good description of that view. So I do like the cover. It's more like a regular flying, but once he's in, it's that whole bottom half is just, you know, the blasting rocket power, sort of a Blastar, except from the waist down.
It looks fun.
Between that depiction of the lower half of his body and the helmet, this was like the hero that like you could maybe draw in your notebook as a kid.
you weren't attempting to draw all those webs on Spider-Man. You just gave up like the 60s Spider-Man cartoon.
And no feet? Oh man, this is great.
Yeah, it's true too.
Well, it just had to be so much faster because you're drawing half the character, but it looks so good that I'm not going to knock it. And I also feel this is well established in our 70s design aesthetic that suits me just fine. It's for me, I think of kind of garish colors, but fairly simplified outfits, which I think is a cool mix of like, so here you have a really bright yellow. I mean, there's that the red accent on the helmet, which stands out, but I would say the outfit itself is fairly, you know, it's got the enhanced shoulders and wristbands and that sort of thing, but it's not really overly elaborate, but the colors really make it sing.
I like that helmet, though.
Yeah, before there were 3¾-inch, like, G.I. Joe figures, all of the action figures were old G.I. Joe size, right? Like, Action Man size. And in the 70s, just before or around the same time this came out, there was the Bullet Man figure that you could actually attach his back onto like a zip line kind of thing and shoot him down. There was something about that Rocket Man thing that was kind of permeating a little bit of the pop culture at that time, and Nova fit right in. I thought the design was really cool. I picked it up as a 6-year-old.
Certainly he went on to a longer career than Bullet Man or any of those.
He was also right at the beginning included in, I mean, this was the time of like the Marvel Fun and Games magazine and like the puzzle books and like the big thick Fun and Games books and stuff, and Nova was included in those too, so he was right up there with the big guns being presented to me as a 6- and 7-year-old as one of the Marvel heroes. Meet the Marvel
and
superheroes.
Also, a slight spoiler, but I enjoyed that they don't lean into, they create a lot of new stuff for him.
Yes.
I mean, we're going to get to a guest star appearance, but they really don't lean into it. Like, it's not, the first issue doesn't have Wolverine and Spider-Man guest starring, and he's going to fight Dr. Doom or something. It really does kind of, here's his own world and his own villains and sidekicks and all that without leaning on help from a more famous, although they put Spider-Man's name on the cover. So.
Yeah. It's funny, I'm getting ahead of myself, but when they do lean into a Marvel character, I found that was like the worst issue. It's weird.
All right, so in issue number one, let's meet Richard Rider. He's a real Peter Parker type, but without the, like, the good grades. And, I mean, he gets beaten by girls in basketball, and his high school days are made miserable by his superior peer, Mike Burley. And this ain't your daddy's Flash Thompson. Mike excels both in the classroom and on the field.
That was weird.
I felt like they were definitely in the shadow of Peter Parker. So they wanted to make him a loser, but give him his own twist. So he's not smart. He has a girlfriend, and his bully is also smart. So I feel like those were all kind of conscious, like, he's Spider-Man in that he's a loser, but we need to make him not the same Spider-Man. Also, has a much richer cast of friends right from the get-go.
Yes.
Puny Parker was always a loner.
He's got his small group of misfit friends, Phineas, Fat Freddy, and Freewheelin' Franklin. No, just kidding. It's Bernie Dillon and Caps Cooper. He's always wearing a cap, don't you know? And the always understanding Ginger J.
Oh, man. If the Freak Brothers showed up in this comic.
Rich lives at home with his middle-class family, including his science-y, super-smart younger brother, Robbie. The guy is smart, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I don't know how he does some of the stuff he does, but that's how smart he is.
He could make web shooters if needed.
I think so.
That was the one I could have done without the insufferable. That one leans so into the stereotype of like the geeky guy that it just crawls a little bit my skin when I read him. But other than that, I dig the, even like the kind of stereotypical sidekicks are fine. But yeah, his little brother, a bit annoying. But I do like Marvel has the distant, aloof dads down pat.
While Rich is drowning his sorrows in a milkshake at Uncle Fudge's with Ginger, 800,000 miles away in space lies an enormous spacecraft approaching Earth. And its lone passenger, the pilot, wears the Nova costume that we see on the cover, and he's citing that he is chasing down a fugitive, a killer of planets.
Isn't that grim? No, like, they're starting out, and you see he's going on about all this stuff, and, like, billions of friends are dead, and all this stuff, and I'm like, wow.
Well, he himself is paralyzed. He's, like, the last surviving member of his race. His world was destroyed. He's dying. So he's gonna send his power to an unknown individual on Earth to finish his mission for him. And I know, right? This sounds a lot like the Green Lantern origin.
I was going to say, like, it's less grim, more Green Lantern for me.
Yeah.
The beam is even green, you know?
I was also thinking of Superman and his planet, like, being destroyed and everything.
Space cop, dying alien, transferring the powers. Nova really was a mix of Green Lantern and Spidey's, like, sensibilities. And I did like that Wolfman made the extra jump that now, even in reboots of Green Lantern, they've gone back and copied the Nova version of the Green Lantern origin by adding in the aspect of him that they're chasing down a fugitive or actually dealing with a mission rather than, I mean, with the Green Lantern in that showcase issue, it's just that the alien crashes on Earth and he's dying in the spacecraft, and he gives the ring over to Hal, right? And here, he's chasing a being who destroyed his planet and left him crippled, and the being is on Earth, so that's what brings him to Earth, and he's chasing the guy down, and he realizes he's too fragile to actually do the job, and he's going to send his power down to someone to do it for him. You know.
It could be you.
Yeah, and they are right up front about it on the cover in the tradition of Spider-Man, you know?
Well, also, we're in the compressed era, so I appreciate that his struggles with his powers are pretty limited. Like, now, and I really hate this in the movies, when they devote a bunch of screen time or pages to, like, wow, I have these crazy powers, how do they work, and a bunch of that. I love these older ones where it's like a page, they're like, hey, how do I fly? And like, they're flying next page. And for me personally, I mean, I get that in the real world, you'd need to figure out how it works and all that stuff. But I like that they just throw us in there and they're not going to have him wrestle with, like, wait, how does this, you know, what does this button do type of thing?
Well, comic books have done it so many times that they figured out what movies have only a couple of times even dared to try. And when they have tried, I've actually appreciated it. But there are other ways to convey that same information, that there was times, but, you know, you can do the montage of clips with the music in the background. You could do whatever. There's a few different funny angles with some sort of bridge in between, or, you know, there's ways to do it that you don't have to spend half the movie doing it. So I agree with you. And comics just have done it so many times that they've figured out a number of different ways to feed you that. The transfer of power here, though, it's not as easy as Rich snaps his fingers and he's Nova. I mean, it puts him in a coma. And and while he's in the hospital in a coma, he gets contacted by the alien from the ship. He's a Centurion. Nova Prime, and now it's Rich's job to stop Zor, but to do that he's got to wake up first, so he does.
Rogol Zar?
And in the page where he wakes up, the doctor's lab coat is colored like Commissioner Gordon's overcoat instead, and the doc is like a 70s.
What doctor is wearing this?
And right, and the doctor's hair and mustache now isn't what you would think of as a doctor, but then it was like the 70s, right, with all the hair and everything like that. So between the error is continued across the whole page, so it makes the doc look like anything but a doctor. That's pretty funny.
I like when he wakes up, though. You get the whole eyeball thing going on in the previous page, and I'm just thinking, are we doing a whole 2001 Space Odyssey thing here?
Sure, that's part of the culture for sure. I mean, this is 6 or 7 years later, right? Rich's reputation at school now is even more damaged because, you know, now he's pitied. He's the kid who almost died in a coma, you know? Well, he's hanging out in his room, doubting the whole comatose visitation thing, when karam, the force of 1,000 cobalt bombs, Kevin. And he transforms into Nova. Boom.
The one thing I didn't, the artifact that I'm glad they got rid of from this time, is I never liked the little chapter headings of the comic book. I always felt it didn't really do much for me.
It made me feel more, I accept them more in DC books for some reason. I like them when it would be like the JLA and it's like a chapter thing, and because each, you know, two members, they split up into small groups and each one has a little chapter thing or whatever. And I don't know, the storytelling reminds me of Silver Age DC that I like.
I don't think it's consistent through all the issues, the chapter breaks, but I could do without them. I know some writers got more clever with them as the years go on.
So Nova can fly, we know that. He's got stronger skin, which helps, you know, when he impacts things when he's flying.
And he doesn't know if he's bulletproof, though. And the way he finds out later on is he gets shot, and he goes, well, I guess that works out. And I'm like, not the wisest move.
Yeah, I guess I'm not dead. And he also conveniently gets police scanner frequencies on his helmet's antenna.
Oh, he must pick up all the channels on there. It's an alien helmet.
Nova originally was a fanzine character of Marv Wolfman and Len Wein's called Black Nova, and at that time his helmet had antenna instead of the starburst symbol. And when Romita and Wolfman retooled the costume, when they were retooling the character and the origin and everything to make him be Nova, it's cool that they kept that function, which only makes sense to exist when it was actually antenna sticking out of the helmet rather than that starburst. So that's kind of cool.
I thought it was a great innovation because it gives him a way to find crime other than I'm just zipping around the city looking for crime, and it's quick, and they can lean into it or not lean into it. And it's an explanation that they don't need to beat in the ground. I like those kind of like, hey, here's this thing. now we are going to move on. And if people want to keep using it, they can. And if they want to forget it exists, like the spider light or whatever, you can.
And then it ties into his mother being a dispatcher, too.
That's true. He's like, oh, my mother's voice. But, it, you know, he does do pretty good just flying around on patrol, as a lot of our heroes do.
Yeah, he has a little more trouble defeating the bad guys, but he can find them.
But he hears on the radio frequencies about Zor trashing a, you know, a street up in the Bronx there, and Nova goes and confronts Zor. He's pretty talky in battle. I guess, you know, that's more that Spider-Man angle coming through.
I think he mentions that.
I gotta say, I love the art and the issue and the Zor design. If I had one small complaint about the thing, I feel like the scale of Zor is hard. Like, he's clearly bigger than a person, but it was a little hard. I would have liked one kind of panel that sort of laid out, like, is he just, you know, like 8 feet tall or like 12 feet tall? It was a little over the place for me. But I love the design, love the art, everything's great. That's Andy's patented nitpick for the issue.
Would you please pick up a car so I can get a sense of your scale?
Yeah. Well, it's a character we've never run into, and the battle doesn't last that long. So it's, you know, I did like that it would make sense that he would have the one advantage of Zor thought that guy was dead. So that would totally throw me if suddenly some guy you just killed showed up and started attacking you. You'd be like, whoa, that seems weird.
But Zor kicks his butt pretty good. You know, it's not Nova who defeats him. Well, it is, because at the last minute, Zor is just zapped away from outer space. And Rich rightly figures that it was the last act from the Nova Prime Centurion above Earth in his ship.
And yeah, that sort of solves my problem, is if he killed the previous Nova, like, is Rich just going to get lucky and defeat him? Like, what's going to... something has to happen here to end this fight.
Well, what's going to defeat him is that leopard print open collar shirt that he's wearing.
Well, Rich really didn't do much here but survive. I mean, exactly. He survived the coma, and he survived the encounter with Zor. For all of the Nova Centurion's thing of like, well, I can't finish this mission, somebody else is, like, he could just zap him from outer space. That's like that's what he did. I don't know, it's too bad the ring doesn't choose its bearer or anything like that. That would be really convenient. I mean, it really was random. He just was the one who got zapped.
Yeah, but that, it leaves all his potential. Like, that ship's still up there and everything. So I'm like, well, when's he going to go up there and check it out? So issue after issue, I'm like waiting. I'm like, there's this cool thing in outer space. Are we going to get there?
We'll get there.
All right.
Issue number 2 has a Sal Buscema cover and also has the team from issue 1 of Marv and John Buscema and Joe Sinnott. Nova's interrupting a bank robbery and has a Spidey moment where the cops, you know, like, want to question him and are harassing him rather than giving him accolades, and he kind of has to fly away from the scene.
But again, here we have two new villains for him with crazy garish colors on basic outfits, like a Angel knockoff, but red, black, and yellow colors. And then like a sleeveless guy in like a purple wrestling outfit with the Buccaneer boots, you know, just for me, that's 70s design aesthetics, and I love it.
It's also serendipitous too, like Nova is flying away from the bank robbery and he gets seen from a distance by a black dude with wings calling himself the Condor. He simply sees Nova fly by and he already knows like his name and comics, yeah. You know, good old comics.
And well, it's like, only this guy could stop me. And then it keeps on referring to like who you think is the Dread, Dormammu, and you're like, what's the deal here?
The Condor, he really pats himself on the back a lot for being like a master planner and everything else. And he returns to his Condor roost, his base of operations.
I know, he's like, only this guy could stop me. I'm like, this guy's barely been around.
Well, when you only have wings as your power, they really need to sell hard that you can do a lot. So
apparently,
he has sharp fingertips.
And he apparently has all this money to have all these computers and like this headquarters and like all this stuff.
He's really bossy too. He has the prisoner lackey buddy of his that he calls Powerhouse. He makes him dress up in the costume. He claims that he found Powerhouse adrift in the ocean unconscious, claiming that he killed everyone on board a merchant ship, but we don't know if that's accurate or not.
Yeah, he's not a great fashion designer, though, because I'm like, ooh, a little rough.
No, none of that stuff is.
While at school, Rich Rider sees the Condor fly by and bolts out of the lunchroom, knocking food all over Mike Burley in the process. You know, I'll get you for this, Rider, as he runs off to take care of his superhero business.
That was the one where I'm like, wait, he sees the guy flying and he's like, something's rotten. And I'm like, because there's a guy flying? Like, that seems a little bit, you know, like, are you profiling the Condor Nova? Because he's just flying around.
If anyone should be able to understand somebody flying, it's him, right? Out of it, no one else in the school is like, oh my God, somebody flying. Except for the guy who can fly. But so the Condor is like easily outmaneuvering the reckless human Rocket, who is not so good at turning, at this time at least.
He leads, needs to put more hours into the flight pattern.
That's right.
Well, that was Cannonball too, remember? He was always having problems turning and controlling his abilities.
Issue one was double-sized, and they had just made more time for him to train, Andrew.
That's going to be the annual. It's all training.
Oh, wow.
Condor leads Nova right into a bear hug from Powerhouse, whose power is to absorb power like a battery. So Nova's all weakened and gets tossed aside when the cops show up and the bad guys split. Back home, while he's licking his wounds, Rich smells smoke and helps his brother put out a chemical fire with an extinguisher, and his brother's scientific explanation gives him like an aha moment. So he goes out patrolling. He sees Condor sneak into the Museum of Natural History. And while inside, Condor's like, he's all talking cryptically about Crips and how he fears this guy, and he's trying to race this dread one to this wizard mummy. And Powerhouse is like, who are you talking about? Who?
The wizard.
But Nova busts in, and Powerhouse gets ordered to fight Nova. And he's like apologizing the whole time they're fighting. Their tussle destroys the mummy sarcophagus, and that pisses Condor off. He bolts. He's got to think. And speaking of thinking, Nova chucks a fire extinguisher at Powerhouse, and it takes him out, but not the way you think.
Are you sure this isn't Atlas from the Thunderbolts, the way he keeps apologizing and everything?
This felt super like the old original Spider-Man run. So many of those first battles, like Electro, he figures out the needs to wear the rubber gloves and the Sandman with the vacuum cleaner and all those. Like, I have the villain. I got to use my brain and figure out a way. Again, I feel like they're really trying to lay and all new bad guys and everything. I do feel like this was their sort of Spider-Man for the 1970s.
Yep. Issue number 3 has the new art team of Sal Buscema and Tom Palmer, who was also Wolfman's inker on Tomb of Dracula, where he did the colors there too, but Wolfman's wife does the colors on this book. Wolfman was the editor, so he could decide who does what. I love this Big John Gia Koya cover, really.
What a great diamond head design. I like the character design of the diamond head. And Steve and Kevin, if you had to pick, in 1976, the four most important heroes that you would train against. Which four would you pick?
The splash page is so funny, which introduces Diamond Head. He's utterly destroying the duplicates of all the big heroes. Spider-Man, Iron Man, Thor, and Nova. Andrew, I always wondered about this whole thing in comics, this whole cliche, like, how do the bad guys bother spending the resources to build these elaborate duplicates of their foes just to destroy them with one punch, you know? Even here, he's like, these robot duplicates are mere child's play to destroy. It's like, well, how hard were they to make, on the other hand, buddy, you know?
You buy them in bulk, Steve.
The one thing I appreciate, though, is it's right from the get-go, they're like, I hate those fake-out where it's like a page or two of, yeah, like, right. Oh, no, your hero's being defeated, and yes. Then in the end, it's a robot. Like, here, they're cruddy. In fact, Spider-Man's leg is metallic. Like, they ran out of, like, a lot of their body parts aren't painted or whatever. They were discount robots.
Yeah. You know, this is the only issue of this series I had for the longest time.
Oh, cool. It's a good one to have. Diamond Head has an attack room, and he somehow forgets about the biggest challenge in his attack room, the Destructoid. And he, too, he's talking about fearing the Dreaded One. And, yeah, it's the same Joe that the Condor and Powerhouse guys were referring to. So Diamond Head's deal is he was Arch Dyker, and he was a bad guy by choice, a teenage Golden Gloves champion, and just pretty much a crime lord wannabe.
I'm thinking, it seems like he could have won places in the world, but he's like, that's not what I'm into. What I'm into is, like, breaking into these places, and, like, they still have this laser going, and I'm just, and then I trip and fall into a laser that they forgot to turn off.
Yep, but now, as Diamond Head, he has the means to achieve those lofty crime boss goals. It works so good for Hammerhead.
You're going to have to worry about the Inkin,
though. As Nova, Rich helps the police when he breaks up, like, a gunfight in the park and then a car chase. It's an amazing sequence. He flies into the car through its roof, into the passenger seat, ripping out the steering wheel, then flies back out of the car, and then in front of the car, and then just stands there and lets the car hit him full on. The driver is like, let me go to prison rather than deal with you, you crazy dude.
It is kind of shocking that the guy could have died in that sort of impact. But yeah. To give those of you that aren't logging in right now, Diamond Head looks a lot like the Martin X from the old Guardians of the Galaxies, which would have preceded a little bit. But I love that, like, faceted stone glimmering design. Although I wonder how much work that is, always kind of charting that out.
Andrew, you forget, though, as far as the danger to the driver, that in the 70s, everyone wore seatbelts.
Yes, and and everyone drove small cars, right, Steve, that didn't have a lot of steel behind them, and it was all plastic little mini cars.
So Rich is becoming much more competent as Nova, because that scene is like that scene is contrasted. They contrast that scene with Rich in school, where he's still getting hassled and gets sucker punched by Mike Burley, but now with his power, he wallops Mike in retaliation.
Again, flashbacks of Peter Parker occasionally would bash Flash. I don't know why Rich is so down. Like, I think Ginger seems like a great gal. Like, she's pretty and attentive and nice and smart. Like, what's his problem, man?
And then he's worried about people finding out his secret ID. And then, but the thing he does is the most worrisome thing out of anything he's ever done in this title, where he runs into a dead end and he disappears.
Yep. That leaves Mike scratching his head. While on patrol, Nova hears of Diamond Head's location and that he's stolen a box taken off Powerhouse when Powerhouse got caught last issue. This leads to 7 pages of back and forth, like, it's like Spidey trying to stop the Juggernaut, but it's 5 years earlier.
Yeah, really a fun battle scene.
Yep.
Great composition. This could have went on for another 20 pages, Steve. Especially the Rhino ending, or like, there's so many of those guys, the Rhino, the Juggernaut, Hammerhead, like their thing is just knocking their head into the other guy. So I love that.
In the end, Nova loses Diamond Head's trail, and again, the issue ends with Condor approaching Diamond Head, being like, hey, let's team up and destroy the Dreaded One forever. They come up with a secret handshake right there at the end of the ish.
And don't forget, we get a mysterious subplot about a character you don't care about at all. Or at least I didn't.
You will soon.
No, I really doubt, Steve, that I'm going to care about Caps at any moment. But he is... But I like that there are boiling subplots going around that are... What's going to happen to his Scooby gang?
Yeah, there's a weird three-panel subplot interlude that shows Caps Cooper coming home and being shocked by who he sees there. Surprised to see the man you thought you murdered? Dun, dun, dun. Issue number 4 has a Jack Kirby, Joe Sinnott cover. Nova versus Thor. The king is back at Marvel, Kevin.
Sadly, I think this is the worst issue out of all of them we read.
Well, the cover is... it's Kirby, but it's got that dynamic energy, but I feel like I think the magic might have left a little bit. Marvel's shabby treatment of him.
Kirby
is disgraceful.
Kirby did not want to draw Thor or the FF again, yet they still gave him some covers. The issue opens with Nova racing across town trying to make a math test that Rich is late for, and he gets further delayed because he has to save Ginger from being killed by a semi.
And he's not even listening to music or anything. It's like he does all this stuff. Like the even holds on to the truck. It's screeching and still she doesn't notice it.
I also really love that we're still in the era where people get their own logos. So the first page has Nova's logo against Thor's classic logo. Yeah. I'm like, what great. I love that stuff.
Cut to Thor helping put out a fire with a bunch of first responders, but he is faced with the first appearance of the dark blue-skinned Corruptor, who puts a whammy on Thor and makes him, like, psychotic. So the gang is hanging out at Uncle Fudge's, whose face you never see.
Man, that name is... I would never eat at a place called Uncle Fudge's, but maybe I'm missing out.
I'm thinking it's going to be like an Aunt Petunia thing, where it's not going to be like what you think when you finally see him or her.
I got a feeling I know what Uncle Fudge sounds like, Steve.
I think it's like the Corruptor.
I like how there's, I mean, you know, the 70s inflation. The Sunday price is raised between consecutive panels by a penny. It's 75 cents, and on the next panel, 76 cents.
That's pretty bad.
There's the usual friction with Mike at Uncle Fudge's, and Rich, Ginger, and Bernie are wondering where Caps has been. I mean, Bernie even went to his house, and the front door was left open. He fears the worst.
That's not suspicious.
Good luck getting me to care, Bernie.
Yeah.
So Rich sees Thor fly by, and he's like, ooh, we're in the same club now. I mean, Diamond Head thought that they were in the same club, right? When he had his doubles and everything. He flies up to introduce himself and is greeted by Crazy Thor.
What an awesome sneer. Like, while I love the Nova design, you're obviously missing a bunch of the facial expressions, so they make up for it with Thor full on, like, teeth clenched, sneering, arched eyebrows, maniac look in his eyes. Like, it's great.
They trade blows for like 4 or 5 pages. The cool scene when Thor is drowning Nova and Rich learns that his helmet, like, adapts to the environment and drops a visor and pumps out the water and starts circulating oxygen. It's like, keeps him protected underwater or in the vacuum of space.
Or in a swimming pool in this instance, which is, like, I like that it's like a rant, because it's a high school. So that's why, you know, because I don't know if we mentioned the tension with Rich's dad is he's in the school system that's having a lot of problems. So he doesn't like that Rich isn't getting good grades and wants compromise. So we can always have, again, another Spider-Man thing where his civilian life locations are going to be locations that also have battles. And that creates also tension.
But he gets a C- when he doesn't study. But if he does study, he gets a C. And I'm like, doesn't seem that bad.
Yeah. Kevin, obviously reaching for the stars there.
the Corruptor changes back to a pink-toned form and loses control of Thor just as Nova is hitting Thor. I mean, really wallops him. But, like, they shake and make up, and then they seek out and take down the Corruptor together because he turned blue again.
Yeah.
But, and thinking so far, I mean, four issues. So far, Zor was killed by the Centurion. Condor escaped. Powerhouse, he caught, was incarcerated. Diamond Head escaped. The Corruptor, he was taken down with the help of Thor, but I mean, it's not that impressive of a record so far for Nova.
Pretty terrible.
But
I think he's doing fine. You're leaving off the bank robbers he stopped and all the regular criminals. You just want to care about how he does against the supervillains.
Well, of course.
Like Andrew said, though, they're all been new supervillains, though, which is kind of cool. All of them were new characters.
But this dude, like, he gets, like, he has his little costume thing, and I'm just like, ugh.
I love when his face transforms, though. Like, again, another great panel of, like, clawing at his face and flop sweat.
But I, like, never want to see this guy again.
Issue number... Well, you will, though.
I feel like the uniform reminds me of the Golden Age Destroyer, but even more garish colors.
Hmm. Yeah.
Issue number 5 has a Kirby Giacoa cover with a great Nova, but a pretty goofy looking robot.
Oh, the robot.
But yeah, that's not, I mean, the it looks better weirdest thing.
The robot looks better in the book, though.
I can't believe that they spend pages and pages on one plot in this issue.
I love this issue.
I'm like, when is that going to end? It's awesome, though. Because I don't know what else they would have filled the issue with, but it's very strange.
Tyrannus, there he is. We recognize him. He's the subterranean Napoleon, right?
He fights the Mole Man.
He wooed the Mole Man's moloids to join him for an assault on the surface world, and he also has this giant mech on his side, the Earthshaker. The next 4 pages are my favorite, though. They really delightfully show Rich hearing a news story about Marvel Comics wanting to meet Nova and do a comic starring him.
Is this not, like, the weirdest thing? I mean, it's cool from a historical perspective, and if you didn't know what the creators looked like or anything, it's awesome in that way to see all that stuff going on at Marvel Comics, but so strange.
You think they needed to have a Jim Shooter come in there and shape things up, straighten out the ship?
Maybe a page or two, or they're just going to have some cameos, but it's like, I don't know, it's like that ultimate Marvel team-up issue where they're just goofing. It's Assistant Editor's Month? It's just very strange.
I feel like it's about the right amount. Like, they have a few gags and make fun of everybody. They tie it into Tomb of Dracula.
Yes.
Which is fun. I know. If they became regular characters, I would hate it. Like, if Marv Wolfman's in every third... But to be like, we're going to have some fun, they're leaning into a classic villain for once, who is just a great, like, scene chewer. Like, the Mole Man is always sympathetic, and he's the exact opposite, where he just kills the moloids for random reasons. So he just makes a great over-the-top bad guy, and this is going to be a fun thing, because also whenever they appear in the comics, they always make fun of themselves, which I really enjoy, like the Mary Marvel Marching Society and all that stuff. Like, they're never like, oh, we're so serious. They're always just goofballs, so I didn't mind it.
When Nova first
they mentioned Harold N. Harold,
absolutely. Well, first when he meets Sal and Marv, I like that he wrongly pronounces Sal's last name phonetically, and Sal corrects him, giving you right then, true believer, the correct pronunciation of Buscema, which is fun.
Yeah.
Then Stan isn't there to hear their pitch, right? So Marv has to shake off John Verporten, who's trying to get a Tomb of Dracula script out of him, and he says his scripts are reliant on getting calls from Harold H. Harold, his boots on the ground, and then he gets a call right then, and he gets a plot for Tomb of Dracula. It's so funny. If you don't know who Harold H. Harold is, listen to any one of the last several Marvel Noises in late October, where we do a Halloween episode and we cover the Tomb of Dracula issues. Too fun.
How about, all the names crossed out on the door for all, like, the editors and everything. Well, like, who's going to be running Marvel now?
Well, it's Archie coming out of his office, and he's the current editor-in-chief, but above his name plaque on the door is Stan crossed off, Roy crossed off, Len crossed off, Marv crossed off, Roy crossed off again, Jerry Conway crossed off, and now Archie.
I also feel it fits because this robot is just a throwback. He's like a giant goofy,
yes,
like one screw hand, one claw grabber hand, and bolts sticking out of him, and a screw. Just not what anyone would actually design ever. So it's a very over the top thing, and the whole plan of sinking cities in and holding them hostage or whatever. It's just fun. This is going to be over the top issue. And I can see if you don't like it, but it's also one issue.
Yeah, and then keep on having people from the Marvel offices, like, throughout the issue, because they're on the scene to get story ideas and everything.
Did you like when Nova did a whirlwind move, Kevin, on the Moloids?
Oh, I was thinking that's more of a Flash move. But yeah, it's a bit of a whirlwind move, too.
I also liked how Sal sees the Moloids and he's like, I've drawn these thingies 1,000 times, but I never thought I'd see them or whatever. On the last page, they finally get to meet with Stan, and he outright rejects the pitch for a Nova book, with Nova standing right there. It's pretty funny.
You find the Nova helmet a little weird. I just find, like, some of the art seems off sometimes, like where Rich's head is, like, too big, or his helmet is too big, or it's, like, misshapen.
The three-quarter shot is tough with that helmet.
Yeah.
The one thing I really like about it is it's that Iron Man where it can collapse into like a flexible hood so he can store it away, and then it stiffens up into the regular hard hood. And I always think that's like a cool trick.
Wait till you get later in the series when it is Carmine and Fantino doing the art, and the distortion on the helmet size and width is significant.
Something to look forward to.
But the stories are good, so I mean, I really didn't want to buy them, but I did because I liked the book, but I didn't like Carmine. I mean, I dropped Star Wars because of Carmine. I dropped Heroes for Hire because of Carmine. I dropped a lot of books because of Carmine. Sorry, Carmine.
Spider-Woman?
Man, I like them because of Star Wars. I love those goofy stormtroopers.
Issues 6 and 7 were a two-parter, kind of a three-parter, but it bleeds into another two-parter, so it seemed like a good place to end things. And instead of Tom Palmer, we now have Giacoa Inks inside the book. There's a Cockrum Romita Giacoa cover on issue 6 and a Kirby Sinnott cover on issue 7.
Yay.
Issue 6 is And So, the Sphinx.
So that's who the dreaded one is?
Yep.
It's the first. And classic comic book trope number 10,000, the characters as chess pieces.
Oh, I love that. I never get tired of that.
It very quickly lets you know that the Sphinx is a master schemer and incredibly powerful, right? And this is his first appearance here, right here in this book, this very issue.
Wow. Again,
the lackey, though, that is a terrible outfit.
Yeah.
Again, the colors on these guys are just, you know, like purple and green and blue and yellow. That's all the same character, by the way.
Yeah.
And then the Crimson Cowl's here, too.
He's got his Yes Man lackey, Kerr, and the mysterious, faceless, robed Sage. Yes, Kevin, even back then when we talked about the New Warriors stuff, I wanted to say, well, you know, Sage was around right from the beginning with the Sphinx, but he was always with him, not apart from him, and so it's interesting. It just as interesting as them retooling the Sphinx into the female character and everything was the fact that Sage was there undoing it all. I thought that was cool.
Yeah,
I really
thought about the Sphinx when he looks at this dude. It's like this Sphinx is just bugging out totally. I can't look at your face.
Well, the superpower is Sage reveals the truth. But I thought they missed a chance with a title like Sage has run out of time or something, like, you know, play on the whole herbal name of the whole thing. But it's fun with Nova, again, you guys make fun of him, but he beats up some robbers pretty good.
Yeah. I mean, the Sphinx is a tortured soul, too. He's immortal, but he's not really enjoying it, you know? But after the bank robbery gets foiled, he visits his pal Bernie. And Bernie's still worried about Caps' disappearance, and rightly so, because Caps gets shown being tortured by a faceless man who has them all chained up, half submerged in a sewer tunnel that is filling with water. I mean, I think it's water.
Yeah, but instead of drowning him, he should have made his face faceless, because that would have fit the crime.
Can he do that?
I don't know. But I laughed how it said that's all we're going to see. We'll have to check back next month. And I'm like, that guy's going to be drowned next month.
We are never going to be that lucky, Kevin. He's going to have a Luke Cage moment where he busts out of that thing or tricks the rats into eating the ropes or something.
No, tricks the rats? He's going to start whistling to the rats?
And that faceless man gimmick, it's somewhat... I think better, it could be creepy, but here it feels a little like, I don't want to say like, I don't know. I think the design could have been better. A faceless man is scary. This one,
dude,
less so.
It creeped me out when I was a kid. And then he ends up, I mean, spoilers for the next time we do these, but I mean, he's like a powerful dude. He's like mega something man. He's like strong. I think it's just Mega Man. He's like powerful and shoots blasts, and he's like a real supervillain. And with this faceless thing, he's very creepy.
It's sad to see Mega Man go evil, but maybe Dr. Wily got to him.
Well, Nova gets captured by the Condor and Diamond Head while they're breaking out Powerhouse. And back at the Condor Roost, computers are used to brainwash Nova into a weapon against the Sphinx.
So you're telling me that Nova wouldn't have fought the Sphinx otherwise? They couldn't convince Nova or trick him somehow to fight another villain?
Kevin, Nova couldn't beat any of these guys. So they're worried. I don't think they're going to send the guy that they can beat up. And I love that there's three of them on him. Like, he couldn't beat one of them. So it's a fun... But that's also, you know, again, geez, maybe a certain Spider-Man annual number one, guys, where, you know, you get the characters, villains together into a team.
Yeah.
Wait till you see how it gets a fresh twist on that.
I think this is one of the better
later episodes. You'll see.
Because I think that Spider-Man annual number one devalues the villains a little bit.
Flash pages are the best.
I love that. Yeah. Yeah. So when they do brainwash Nova, he gets so bad in the head that when he wakes up, he's like takes over like the gang. He wants to be the boss of the gang, which makes me think of that What If, where it was What If Nova was four different people and one of them was like a bad guy who was like smoking a cigar and like hanging out with Dr. Doom and stuff. But none of this that's happening comes as a surprise to the Sphinx, because he's been spying on them all along. He's like watching from a crystal ball. The Condor then tells Nova the Sphinx's origin, that he was a chief wizard for Ramses, the emperor, until Moses outsnaked him and he got banished.
Snake on snake action.
In the desert, he comes upon a temple and uncovers the Ka Stone and becomes immortal.
And we find out that that's mostly the truth, but there might be some change. I like the unreliable narrator, as long as we're told up front, you know.
It's just fun hearing and seeing the original presentation of this character and the character's origin and stuff, since we just had that alternate reality, you know, version of it in the New Warriors bit. Condor and Nova pull a brazen, like, right through the front door type heist to get the last components that they need to retrofit Condor's ship to be able to go into space. His plan, Kevin, is to rendezvous with Nova's spaceship and get some weapons there that they can use against the Sphinx.
Oh, finally, I want to see what's inside that spaceship. There should be cool stuff or history or where... like this original Nova guy came from.
Please, Kevin, there's two dead bodies in that thing.
Oh, that's right.
They reach the ship.
They do.
And, I mean, it impresses the Sphinx that they head right for the weapons that they would need. So he remotely causes the ship's defenses to act against them. And in the melee with the robots and the tentacles and stuff, Nova regains his mind and fights the Condor, Diamond Head, and Powerhouse. But, you know, like Andrew said, he's no match for any one of them, let alone the three of them. He gets clonked in the back of the head by Diamond Head, and they all like make a run for it, leaving Nova behind on the ship that suddenly is active and starts flying away from Earth with Nova trapped on it.
What a cliffhanger.
And the spaceship design, they should write a small check to Jack Kirby, because I feel it's in his debt. But yeah, it's not, and I like the idea of the support computer. I mean, that's going to get beat to death in the 80s. But yeah, right now, it's a smart gimmick of like, oh, that way if the character needs to know something or figure something out or needs a tool, like you have a built-in story reason for it. So all on board with that support idea.
You know, that ship design, it has the Kirby look to it, but it also is that big, long cylinder design, which makes me think of the Arthur C. Clarke Rama book that was in the late 60s, I think, which would have been predated this by less than a decade as well. That big, giant, orbiting spaceship that's just up there waiting for someone to go check out what's on it. That's cool. That's very science fiction-y, and the title definitely takes a science fiction bent, and certainly the journey ends up being more science fiction-y than Spider-Man would ever get to enjoy.
Oh yeah, and if you want a laugh and you're silly Marvel Noise listeners, go to page 15 and check out the lasers. They're worth a couple of yucks if you look at them. That's all I'll say here.
All right, that's the first 7 issues of Nova, and I mean, we got to find out what happens to Caps. We got to find out what happens to Nova.
Caps.
And I'm telling you, stick with it, because the whole thing of what happens with Condor and Diamondback and the Sphinx and Powerhouse and everything is not at all what you expected, Crimebuster. Did I say Crimebuster?
There's a 6-blade knife doing